Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. We have some clips for you this evening from the various speeches last night. A little compare and contrast for you, for your amusement. Before we get to the political stuff, frankly, I'm just about had enough, haven't you? And the really grungy part of the political season hasn't even begun yet. The really bad stuff. I understand today McCain said he's challenging Barack Obama to 10 town hall style meetings, debates. They always say that, don't they? I'm going to challenge you to 10 of them. A little item here about former U.S. Attorney Alberto, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, the Bush's former chief law enforcement officer and White House counsel. And remember, his name was floated as a possible Supreme Court nominee before they put Sammy the Fish Alito in there. He was charging about $40,000 for every public appearance. Alberto was, and there was some interest in him when he was Attorney General, when he was the White House Counsel. He was raking the bucks like so many of these folks do. Democrat and Republican. This is nonpartisan slam right now, okay? Because I really have some bad feelings about politicians of any stripe that get into office, do whatever they do, and then when they get out, hire professional speechwriters to in a booking agency and go out and cash in. To me, that just I don't know. It has a stench to it, and they all do it. It really has a stench to it. But anyway, I digress. Alberto was charging $40,000 for every public appearance. And now, all of a sudden, he's stuck doing commencement addresses. That's about as far as he can go. Now, that in and of itself is not particularly a bad thing. You know, not necessarily a bad thing at all. Because you expect former attorneys general to speak at, a Harvard Law School commencement, things like that. But Alberto Gonzalez, according to Patriot, who sent me this, Alberto Gonzalez isn't speaking at elite law schools graduations or non-elite law schools or universities. Gonzalez's latest appearance was at he gave the commencement address at Free Will Baptist School's graduation ceremony last Friday night. He delivered a personal story of how his persistent pursuit of education brought him his American dream. This is a high school in the Virgin Islands. It's not necessarily a big high school. The graduating class had 6 students. The principal of Free Will Baptist said Gonzalez is a friend of a friend, and one assumes that Free Will Baptist did not pay Gonzalez the $40,000, which raises the question, does Alberto Gonzalez do children's birthday parties too? What do you think? That might be fun. Do you remember him? Doesn't he seem like just so last decade or something? Alberto Gonzalez, do you remember him? You remember him, don't you? That kind of puffy, slick-down look, the smarmy kind of, bite me, I'm the attorney general, I'm involved in the kind of illegal activity that would make your head spin like Linda Blair's in The Exorcist if you knew about it. But in the meantime, bite me. Right? Remember that? Remember him? Sure you do. Some new stuff coming up from the Bush crime family. This comes from Radio New Zealand, and it applies to New Zealanders, but I heard a report the other day that it's going to apply to most of the countries in the European Union. But regarding New Zealanders, those traveling to the U.S. will soon have to apply online at a U.S. government website for entry into this country at least 3 days before they plan to travel. Now, this comes from security legislation passed by this whorish Congress we have back in the wake of the September 11th terrorist attacks. You have to apply online if you want to come here. God knows why you would want to. Why would you want to leave a gorgeous country like New Zealand to come to this sump hole of a country? That's what we are right now. After 8 years of the Bush crime family, that's where we are. Staff at the New Zealand Embassy in Washington will receive, received a briefing today, as a matter of fact, about new entry rules that apply to all countries with a visa waiver agreement with the U.S. The changes will take effect in January. Now, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, one Helen Clark, says the move will put another step in the way of people traveling to the U.S. The Green Party has described the new rules. The New Zealand Green Party has described the new rules as, quote, bureaucracy gone mad, end quote, in the name of the so-called war on terror. A member of the New Zealand Parliament and a member of the Green Party in that country said it will cause problems for business people and tourists making last-minute travel changes. And it's going to anger some countries friendly to the U.S. Who would that be? Who is still friendly to the U.S.? The U.K., Saudi Arabia, Jordan, I think, Israel. Come on, Mike. Canada? I think that's about it. You have to apply online 3 days before you want to come here to the Holy Land to worship at our shrines. And why is that? Because, well, somebody may board an airplane in New Zealand with the intent of doing harm in the United States once they get here a day and a half later. Meanwhile, the Canadian-U.S. border and the Mexican-U.S. border and most of our ports and shorelines are wide open. Who thinks this stuff up? Oh, Republicans, okay. Rick in Mesa, Arizona writes, I always find it amusing how people like Cheney and Bush fool people into thinking they are one of them. I'm talking about the folks in small rural areas in the South or the Midwest that vote against their own best interests because they believe all Republicans hail from a small corner of this country just like their little corner. Now we have West Virginians saying they will not vote for Obama because he's black. While Cheney jokes about West Virginians having a propensity for incest. And still the people of West Virginia will not get it. And what Rick is writing about, Cheney was at the National Press Club to congratulate this year's winner of the Gerald R. Ford Journalism Prize for distinguished reporting on the presidency. Jesus, who won that? During a Q&A session toward the end of the luncheon, someone asked Cheney about his wife Lynn's revelation on MSNBC last year that Dick and Barack Obama are eighth cousins. The questioner jokingly asked the vice president if he and Obama were going to have a family reunion, to which Dick replied he would, quote, have no objections, end quote, though he said he doubted Obama would want one, quote, certainly not before November, end quote. Then came the offensive punchline. Cheney explained that during the course of researching his family lineage for Lynn's memoir, titled Blue Skies, No Fences, last year, he learned there were Cheneys on both his father's side and his mother's side of the family. There was even a Richard Cheney, as in Dick, on his mother's side, the vice president said. And then he quipped, quote, So I had I had Cheneys on both sides of the family, and we don't even live in West Virginia. Hey, people in West Virginia, do you get it? Do you get it? Do you get it? You do? Isn't that a knee slapper? Huh? Doesn't that make you just want to run out to the 7-Eleven, buy some more of that Red Bull and pack of unfiltered Luckies and just kind of kick back and go, God damn, I love Republicans. What does incest mean? I don't know. What does that mean? And it's going to happen. Do you know how many votes McCain is going to get this year in the election? What's he going to get? 50 million? Huh? something like that. I keep going back to that speech he gave last night, the video presentation, where he was about as stirring as, I don't know, as a bad case of constipation, you know? I watched that again today, and I thought, what is this guy doing? Well, my friends, Barack Obama talks loud and waves his arms, and I don't, because I can't, but I believe in working across the aisle. We call that in the Senate a reach around. And we got to return this country to its, those things underneath the plant. Roots. We got to return this country to the roots. That doesn't sound like change over there. I mean, it's just. More when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Well, cowboy, that just goes to prove it can always happen again. So if you ever get a notion to state what's on your mind, make sure it's something flattering or at least extremely kind, or you'll find your controversy quotients completely out of hand. Though you might improve your record sales and the quality of your fans.
Let's beat on the Dixie Chicks, who we're too nice to use rocks and sticks. So let's demolish their CDs with a bulldozer or whatever you please.
If this reminds you a little bit of bonfires in Berlin. Well, cowboy, that just goes to prove we can get you.
Virgin Atlantic flew a 747 from London's Heathrow Airport to Amsterdam, fueled partly by coconuts.
A peance, freeance.
Yeah, okay. Cut off the peance, freeance. Thank you very much. Barack Obama said one of the first things he wants to do, if he's elected president, is ensure the constitutionality of all the laws and executive orders passed while the Bush crime family has laid waste to the U.S. He didn't put it exactly that way, but you get the point. He says that those laws and executive orders that don't pass constitutional muster will be overturned. Keep in mind, he's a former constitutional law professor, right, at the University of Chicago Law School. Although, when the Republican meat grinder cranks up, they will try to convince the mouth breathers that really he was a janitor at the University of Chicago Law School, not a professor. I mean, after all, just look at him, right? Anyway, during a fundraiser in Denver a few weeks ago, he was asked what he hoped to accomplish during his first 100 days in office. Obama said, quote, I would call my attorney general in and review every single executive order issued by George Bush and overturn those laws or executive decisions that I feel violate the Constitution, end quote. Other goals for his first 100 days, work out a plan to withdraw troops from Iraq, make progress on alternative energy plans, and launch legislation to reform the health care system. Okay, now, I'm just declaring for the record that I'm willing to make a leap of faith here. I know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. And all the times we have heard the promises and the rhetoric by so-called political reformers, and all the times we've been slapped in the face with a dead fish. But I'm going to try it one more time. I really am. I really, really, really am. I'm going to allow the belief that this man is going to try to do the right thing. And I'm going to base that on his youth. his cultural diversity, and what seems to be, at least so far, his commitment to doing the right thing. Now, I know. You can go to any website you want to go to and find just scathing attacks. I'm not talking about right-wing websites. I'm just talking about regular websites. Scathing attacks on Obama based on his record. And I think you should do. I think you should do the research. I really do. But don't stop there. Do the research on McCain also. And then you can send me an email that says, all right, Mike, you're right. I'll have to pick the lesser of two evils yet again. Well, I'm not, you know, I'm just not going to frame it that way this time. I'm not. I'm going to hope. I'm going to hope that Barack Obama will do the right thing. And if that doesn't turn out to be the case, I said this last night, I think I said it last night or the night before, if it doesn't turn out to be the case, if it does, in fact, turn out to be that both the Republican and Democratic parties are, as Nader and George Wallace before his death said, just opposite sides of the same coin, if that's the case, then I will switch over to the Socialist Workers' Party, and that's the end of it. Together, we were on the ball. We did not believe in the writing on the wall. We did our best work in the dark. We did our thinking on the run. We would hang together, or they'd hang us one by one.
Is in the lead when it comes to energy independence. We're in the lead when it comes to global climate change, and we'll stay that way.
We're what? Brent Badowski writing at The Hill's pundits blog pretty much nailed it today about Hillary Rodham Clinton and the speech last night. Budowski writes that Clinton continued her efforts to do anything possible to elect John McCain. He says Clinton's performance was so devoid of grace and class, there are not even words to describe it. It's one of the most self-indulgent and inappropriate performances in the history of presidential politics. Budowski says, today I talked to several very high-ranking Democrats, all of whom found this performance shameful and pathetic. She hurt herself far more than she realizes. The inconvenience to the far more gracious Obama will pass. The further deterioration of sentiment towards Clinton among many who matter to her future will last. And the notion of Hillary as VP has always been a figment of the cable news imagination from people who do not know what is actually going on. It will not happen. There is no need to list the litany of reasons, which are many. But Hillary's performance was a performance for the ages, a moment of history, one in which she chose to remain on the low and self-indulgent road, giving new meaning to the term bad loser. Well, all right, Brent, but at least she kept smiling during the whole thing. And I don't know, like I said, it's only just beginning, the real slime. And I'm already just so tired of it. Aren't you really? See, this would be another reason to advocate for a parliamentary system or a variation of a parliamentary system. Very quick, to the point. Vote of no confidence. That's it. Let's have new elections. A piece of perhaps good news, although I guess we'll have to wait and see. But this is from the. Who is this from? This is a press release. Well, it's from the 20 organizations supporting something called the Trade Act. Have you heard about that? The Trade Act. TRADE is a acronym for Trade Reform Accountability Development and Employment Act. Well, here's the skinny. About 50 House and Senate co-sponsors have been joined by 20 leading labor, environmental, family, farm, and faith groups in supporting new legislation offering a positive vision for future U.S. trade policy. The Trade Act bill was introduced by Sherrod Brown, Senator, Democratic Senator from Ohio, and Mike Michaud, Democratic Representative from Maine. It was introduced today. I think it was introduced today. Now, what this act triggers is a review of all existing trade agreements. That would include NAFTA. Probably a review of GATT, and will provide a process to renegotiate them. The bill also outlines principles of what should be included in future trade agreements. And the act expresses the sense of the Congress that their role in trade policymaking should be strengthened. Senator Brown said, quote, "The Trade Act will help Congress and the White House craft a trade agreement that benefits workers, business owners, and our country. We want trade, and we want more of it, and the Trade Act is a critical first step on a path, a new path for trade." And Representative Michaud said the Trade Act's clear articulation of what we're for and its very specific benchmarks for current and future trade agreements provides a balanced way forward that grounds our trade policy on the impact these policies have on Americans' everyday lives, end quote. Well, that sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Teamsters President James Hoffa, added his organization's support. He said, quote, "The Trade Act would make sure that the benefits of trade go to workers as well as the richest few. It sets new rules for global trade that creates good jobs and improves working conditions everywhere," end quote. Larry Cohen, President of the Communication Workers of America, said the Trade Act, quote, "The Trade Act restores Congress's constitutional right of oversight in trade policy. The Bush administration has trampled on that right." Bruce Rayner, president of Unite Here, said, quote, "This bill breaks new ground on the enforcement of labor rights, environmental protection, food and product safety, procurements, safeguards against surges of imports, trade remedies against unfair trade practices, and the ability for countries to regulate foreign investments," end quote. Brent Blackwelder, president of Friends of the Earth, said, quote, "Trade agreements should support rather than undermine environmental protection. The Trade Act encourages responsible behavior," yada, yada, yada. So maybe something is stirring here. Do you think? Another activist, Andrew Gussert, national director of CTC. What the hell is the CTC? Kathy, what is that? What is CTC? Anyway, he said, quote, "Not one environmental, labor, family, farmer, religious group in the country supports current pacts like the Colombia Free Trade Agreement. But progressive organizations want to see a responsible expansion of trade. This legislation is a balanced way to expand trade, offering us all a fair way forward. It means future trade agreements can better serve a majority of people on issues such as jobs, environment, human rights, and public health." Okay. Okay. It's the 20 organizations supporting the act include union organizations, AFL-CIO, National Farmers Union, Friends of the Earth, United Methodist Church General Board of Church and Society, Communications Workers of America, Americans for Democratic Action, Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, a National Family Farm Coalition. And it goes on and on. So there appears to be something in the works by progressive members of the House and the Senate, joined by progressive members from the faith community, the labor community, the environmental community, to try to undo some of the damage that has been occurring since the 70s, when Fast Track, so-called, was first enacted. As they point out in this press release, since 1975, the trade deficit has gone from a slight surplus to an unsustainable $700 billion deficit in 2007. Nearly 5 million manufacturing jobs have been lost. American worker productivity doubled, but median wages are only 1% above 1970s levels. This bill articulates specific changes needed to the failed NAFTA World Trade Organization model to ensure trade deals achieve good jobs, safe food, promotion of basic human rights, healthy communities, and environmental protection. You got to like that, huh? I do. I didn't see this on the news tonight. I don't know. Maybe to wind up on page 68 of the Washington Post or 120 of the Sunday New York Times. But thank goodness for these Senate and House co-sponsors. I'd be willing to bet that every one of them is a Democrat, because Republicans are pure pukes in Congress, in the House and the Senate. They are no more interested in this sort of thing than they are interested in a bad case of jock itch. But thank goodness there must be some House and Senate members, I don't have the entire list, who do believe that there's a better way to do things. There's a better way to, you know, to have John McCain travel through Michigan and say, my friends, these jobs are all gone. They're gone forever. You know, that and some Democrat, I don't know, think of a name, Hillary Clinton? Okay, Hillary Clinton screeching that, and she did screech. That's not sexist. She screeched. McCain sounds like he's talking out of his rectum. Hillary screeches. It's very simple. But having someone like Hillary Clinton say, well, you know, these jobs are going to return. I'm going to bring them all back. Well, maybe it wasn't Hillary Clinton. Who was it? Oh, it was that Mormon guy. Mitt Romney. Yeah, Mitten. All right, excuse me. It wasn't Hillary. I don't know what Hillary said, but it was Mitt Romney who said, these jobs are all coming back. They really are. We're going to make sure that you have a job, a chicken in every pot, as many wives as you want. Whoops, I wasn't supposed to say that, was I? That's a Mormon joke. So pay attention to this. You may, because I'm damn sure I'm going to, it's called the Trade Act. I know a lot of you are way ahead of me on this. It's called the Trade Reform Accountability Development and Employment Act. The Trade Act. Just introduced today. Actually, the press release is for tomorrow, but it was just introduced today. Let's see what happens. Let's encourage members of the House and the Senate to enact this. I mean, don't you think? I think. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M. All over this land.
Spending in the war might help with jobs, because we're buying equipment and people are working. I think this economy is down because we built too many houses.
Dumbass. Oh, my God. You know, that brings up another point. What's the problem with the fact that Barack Obama appeals to young, educated, middle-class voters? You know, I've heard that. I didn't know that until I started hearing the pundits reporting on the exit polls, and that Hillary Clinton was a favorite among old working class, women, and people with less education. Now, I don't know how people get that information. I guess they get it from exit polling, right? Somebody comes out, who'd you vote for? How much education you have? What's your gender? How old are you? Blah blah blah. What is it that makes it somehow dodgy or questionable that so-called middle class, and I defy anyone to define that demographic term any longer, but so-called middle class, well-educated young people, relatively speaking, who support Barack Obama, why is that a questionable or a dodgy or a suspicious thing? When Obama made his statement about people who feel isolated, left out of the loop, what is that, about 80% of Americans at this point? People who feel they have no control over their destiny, they certainly don't have any control over who we go to war with anymore. Those decisions are made by the executive branch. No decision over whether or not their job is going to be here tomorrow. No decision of whether or not they can take a vacation. No decision as to whether or not their retirement benefits are going to be in place. No decision about, ability to make a decision about their health care. And in feeling that way, as Obama pointed out, people will turn to their religion and their guns. And that's true. I mean, what is not true about the statement? So here's a candidate that appeals to people whom the pundits tell us fall into that demographic group of well-educated, younger, so-called middle class, a lot of whites, a lot of blacks, and that's a bad thing? Why is it a bad thing that Barack Obama can give a speech that inspires people? What's wrong with that? How did that become a bad thing? How did that become something that identifies Barack Obama, ha 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 ha, as an elitist? Give me a break! An elitist? A black man in America? An elitist? But how quickly Barack Obama's opponents and the news media jumped all over that one, eh? Like a duck on a June bug, right? He's an elitist. Some bitch went to Harvard. He likes arugula, you know, that green stuff. He doesn't eat head lettuce like the rest of us. He's an elitist. Why is that? Why is it that because someone can inspire America, or a percentage of America, I know you Hillary bots are just, I mean, you're ready to eat your own paws. I know you are. You are so pissed off, aren't you? Huh? Goddamn Obama! I know. I understand. I'll vote for Hitler for a vote, brat, son of a bitch! Right? I know. I read the emails. I see what's going on. I go to other websites and read all the stuff. You people are going to choke to death on your own bile. You understand that, don't you? Huh? You do? Okay, good. But what is it about the fact that the man is articulate, gives a hell of a speech? We're going to compare and contrast for you next hour. Is the next hour we're going to do that with Hillary and McCain and Obama, especially McCain? Oh my God, my friends. I'm going to sit up here and just keel over. You know why? I don't either, my friends. It's unbelievable. But the attacks on Obama because he's young and attractive and intelligent, how did we get to that? How did we get to that? That someone young, attractive, intelligent, articulate, able to inspire people, all of a sudden that is a questionable set of aspects of someone who wants to be president. What do you people want? How many times do we hear, well, I'm going to vote for George Bush instead of Al Gore because, you know, I like to go have a beer with George Bush. Why? Well, in the first place, he claims that he's not a drunk anymore and doesn't drink. But why would you want to have a drink with a phony son of a bitch who will take your child and throw him into a war that shouldn't even be there? Why would you do that? Because you're insane? That's a possibility, right? Are the people who get their bloomers in a wad because Barack Obama is who he is, are you insane too? Yes, you just may well be. That's going to wind up in the DSM-4. Obama-phobe. What is it you don't like about Obama? Well, doctor, son of a bitch talks too big. You know what I'm saying? And he makes people, I watch people who support him and they get smiles on their face. God damn it, I haven't smiled since 1971. And I want to see anybody else smile. And he gets people all stirred up and gets them standing on their feet and clapping and stuff. And I don't want to do that. I want to bitch and whine and moan and complain and stay down here in the gutter. And, you know, as long as the queers can't marry, I'll vote for a goddamn dog if I have to. Doctor, I just get tired of it. Don't you? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Prairie 2 says, if the demographics showed that angels were voting for Obama, the corporate mouthpieces would make sure to mention that Satan was an angel. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. We're going to have some interesting sound for you in a few minutes. You might like to get your teeth around this one. The U.S. military has awarded an $80 million contract to a prominent Saudi financier who has been indicted by the U.S. Justice Department. Yeah. The contract is to supply jet fuel to American bases in Afghanistan, and it was awarded to a company called Attock Refinery Limited, a Pakistani-based refinery owned by Gaith Faraon, P-H-A-R-A-O-N, you take a shot at it. Anyway, he is wanted in connection with his role in the failed Bank of Credit and Commerce International, the BCCI, and the SunTrust Savings and Loan Scandal, which cost U.S. taxpayers almost $2 billion. Now, I know nobody remembers BCCI. That is so long ago it's just back in the 90s, you know, last century. So screw it. But this is one of the key guys. He was also named in a 2002 French parliamentary report as having links to informal money transfer networks called Hawala, known to be used by traders and terrorists, including Al-Qaeda. Oh, and also, Gaith Faraon was an investor in George W. Bush's first business venture, Arbusto Energy. Why, sure. But no, let's talk about Barack Obama's former preacher. Yeah, that makes sense. Spokesman for the FBI said Gaith Faraon was not wanted in connection with the French report, but confirmed he was still being sought by the U.S. Justice Department. Well, I have an idea, boys. Send him his check, and when the son of a bitch goes to cash it, bust him! A spokesman for the FBI said Gates Faraone is an FBI fugitive indicted in both the BCCI and SendTrust case. If anyone has information on his location, they're requested to contact the FBI or the U.S. Embassy. Mr. Spokesman for the FBI, yoo-hoo! I have an idea. Go to the Pentagon, you dumbass! They just wrote him a check for $80 million! The U.S. military purchases jet fuel from this fugitive's company through the contractor Supreme Fuels. According to U.S. government website, the $80 million contract for 2008 was posted this week on a U.S. government website. The company supplied the U.S. military more than $40 million in jet fuel in 2007. An official at this company, ATOC, who did not want to be named, confirmed the refinery was supplying thousands of tons of jet fuel to the U.S. base at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan every month. The U.S. military did not respond to ABC News, who requested a comment. And, of course, interestingly, Mr. Gay Farron could not be reached for comment. So the Justice Department, the FBI, they're looking for this guy. He's indicted. He is indicted in a major fraud case, bank fraud, wire fraud, probably transnational wire fraud. Well, obviously, he is a real filthy son of a bitch and one of Bush's business partners. And the FBI would like to talk to him, but gosh darn it, they just can't find him. However, somehow, some way, the U.S. military under Robert Gates can find him very easily when they want to write him a check for $80 million of your and my money. Oh, excuse me, of China's money. You and I went bust a long time ago, booby. This is astonishing. Bush business partner, every time you turn around, this rat bastard in the White House, every time you turn around, his fingers are up another Saudi's nose, right? And vice versa. That's how they walk around. You know that? Ever notice Bush? They hold hands while they're on camera when he's with one of these Saudi sheikhs. As soon as the camera's gone, they immediately stick their fingers up each other's noses. That's some, I don't know, it's some international signal of, you know, I'll scratch you, yours, you scratch mine, or something. $80 million U.S. contract. What's the date on this story? Today! Bush's former business partner. Every time you turn around, Bush's former business partner, Bush's another Saudi terrorist, Bush's former business partner, Bush's former business partner, on and on and on. And this filthy pig has the audacity to commit U.S. military forces into his disgusting little war so he can go down as a war president. While he's doing business and has done business with these terrorists for how long? 40 years? The Bush crime family? The same family that financed the Nazis so they could wipe out 6 million Jews? Huh? It just doesn't stop, does it? But you know what? There's so many people out there who are going to vote for John McCain because you know what? That goddamn Obama, I don't like him. He's a liberal. And I wanted Hillary to be president, and she ain't going to be now because of Obama. So I'm going to vote for McCain. That's what I'm going to do because I want more of this. I want more of it. I want more chaos and calamity, more wars. I want to see my standard of living go even further into the sub-basement. I'm going to vote for McCain. I'll show those damned old Obama Kool-Aid drinkers. You people are sick. You're really sick. You really, really, really are. This is interesting. As you know, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee's annual policy conference has been in full swing in D.C., and practically every American politician of any consequence whatsoever has made the pilgrimage. This is like Arabs going to Mecca, you know, or Muslims going to Mecca. It really is a U.S. politicians going to the AIPAC conference. It's unbelievable. And when I brought this up, when was it? Earlier this week or last week? I got a bunch of emails, and we'll get to them. You know, people trying to explain to me the importance or lack thereof of AIPAC. A good friend of mine said that, you know, you're so off base on this because AIPAC has great PR, but they have no influence. Well, okay, we'll get to that in a second. But every single American politician of any consequence, every year at this convention, they all stream up there and say, you know, and the AIPAC board sits there and listens and davens and says, okay, you get our stamp of approval. And what do? They lower their foreheads and whack with a rubber stamp that says approved by AIPAC? Is that how it works? Well, there they've all been, including Hillary and Barack and Reid and Pelosi and then just on and on and on. Now, according to some observers, this is from Seth Walls writing at the Huffington Post. According to some observers, Senator Barack Obama faced the prospect of a cool reception during his speech Tuesday morning at the AIPAC annual policy conference. But after receiving a massive ovation upon entering the crowd's view at the Washington Convention Center, the newly crowned presumptive Democratic nominee for president apparently felt comfortable enough to meet any residual doubts about his record on Israel's security with a touch of humor and a boatload of specifics. Well, we'll have more on this when we come back from the break, which I think is coming up right now, I believe. There it is. We'll be back in a second. Stick around. Because you see, there was a confrontation today that has people mystified between Barack Obama and Joe Lieberman. And we'll have the facts about that. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Take great comfort in knowing that they don't know what they're talking about, because history takes a long time for it to reach, and there's no such thing as short-term history.
All right, so all of Washington's elite have been making the pilgrimage to, which I guess they're required to do at least once in their lifetime. Oh, no, wait, that's what Muslims have to do about Mecca. But to AIPAC, the AIPAC convention. The annual policy conference at the Washington Convention Center, Barack was there. He expected sort of a cool reception, but he got just a screaming ovation, massive ovation, is the way it's reported by Seth Walls at the Huffington Post. Seth goes on to say, referencing chain emails filled with what Obama described as tall tales regarding his positions on Israel, the Illinois senator asked AIPAC delegates to let him know if, quote, you see this guy named Barack Obama, this guy, because he sounds pretty frightening, end quote. that's humor. That's AIPAC humor. He proceeded to tell the audience that he would speak from his heart, and then he hit a series of specific pro-Israel positions that brought the crowd to its feet several times. Seth Walls goes on, chief among his own pledges, Obama said he would, quote, never take military action off the table, end quote, in defending America's interests or those of Israel. He said to the crowd, quote, do not be confused, end quote. Okay, all right. He also called on Egypt to cut off the smuggling of weapons into Hamas-controlled Gaza. described the return of Israeli soldiers captured by Hezbollah as a priority of U.S. policy and said he would never, quote, compromise when it comes to Israel's security, end quote. He also identified Jerusalem as Israel's capital at the end of any two-state solution, even though the Muslims don't quite agree. Seth Walls goes on, still Obama sought to draw contrast with the Bush administration and by extension John McCain. He noted he had opposed holding elections in the Palestinian territories in 2006 with Hamas on the ballot. He did? A stand that drew cheers. Obama also said he would not wait until, quote, the waning days, end quote, of his presidency to press for Israeli-Palestinian peace. An implicit rebuke of the punk in the White House. Those are my words, not Seth Wall's words. Seth goes on, quote, when Obama invoked the Hebrew phrase tikkun olam regarding the need to repair this world, a large whoop of cheers went up from young AIPAC staffers who had been herded around the press area, perhaps to make certain the media heard loud praise for Obama. If their placement and the volume of their cheers was calculated, it turns out AIPAC need not have been so concerned, meaning that Barack said all the right things to the AIPAC delegates. And then Seth Walls concludes by saying a sustained round of enthusiastic applause from the entire conference followed Obama as he left the stage and shook hands with more than three dozen AIPAC board members who were seated behind him, an elaborate process that was projected onto the hall's eight jumbo monitors, each previous speaker at the conference, by contrast, only air-kissed and shook hands with those board members conveniently seated on the aisles behind the podium. But for Obama, the individual attention was perhaps a necessary and appreciated touch. Now, given that, what do you suppose Lieberman's reaction was? Now, keep in mind, keep in mind that Barack Obama campaigned for Lieberman against Ned Lamont. Ned Lamont turned around and whipped Lieberman's ass in Connecticut in the Democratic primary, which caused Lieberman to declare himself to be an Orthodox independent. And he is now a burr under the saddle of the Democratic Party in the Senate. Keep that in mind. Barack Obama campaigned for Lieberman. In return, or prior to that, Lieberman was more or less Barack Obama's mentor when Barack Obama first came to the U.S. Senate. Nice little relationship there, right? Huh? Lieberman, Obama, Obama-Lieberman. Sort of a grandfather-grandson relationship. Stick with me. I'm a mensch. I told you about Hadassah. Oh, God. When she makes krevlak, it's just no good. I don't know, Barack. Maybe I should eat some of your soul food. I don't know. Hadassah is just... And, you know, she smells like mothballs. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Barack, what should I do? Oh, God. You know, I the weird thing, Barack, you don't have this problem with Michelle, I'm sure. But Hadassah, I've never seen her naked. I don't know. It's just, it makes me crazy. No wonder, what's his name? Gore and I went nowhere. You know, Lieberman. Well, when we come back, I'll tell you what the dust-up was in the Senate between these two. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Press. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It's about 26 before the hour. All right, I'm going to interrupt myself here with this Huffington Post. I just shared with you Seth Walls writing at the Huffington Post about Barack Obama's speech to AIPAC. Sam Stein has also written at Huffington Post, writes about what happened today between Lieberman and Barack. But before we do that, I want you to hear the sound that we have for you. This is... It was a big night for political speeches last night. We'd like to play just a few clips for you to compare and contrast these speeches by Clinton, McCain, and Obama. Starting with Clinton's bizarre non-concession speech from New York last night. Here in this first one, she talks about how she's got more votes than Obama, which makes you wonder why she's not the candidate, right?
I am just enormously grateful because in the millions of quiet moments in thousands of places, you asked yourself a simple question. Who will be the strongest candidate and the strongest president? Who will be ready to take back the White House and take charge as commander-in-chief and lead our country to better tomorrows? People in all 50 states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and the territories all had a chance to make your voices heard. And on election day after election day, you came out in record numbers to cast your ballots.
But you still lost.
Nearly 18 million of you cast your votes. For our campaign, carrying the popular vote with more votes than any primary candidate in history.
Well, okay. And the delusions just kept coming. Some odd remarks about invisible people.
You know, for the past 7 years, so many people in this country have felt invisible, like your president didn't even really see you. None of you is invisible to me. You never have been. I see you, and I know how hardworking you are. I've been fighting for you my whole adult life, and I will keep standing for you and working for you every single day. The challenges we face are great, but our determination is greater. You know, I understand that a lot of people are asking, what does Hillary want? What does she want? Well, I want what I have always fought for in this whole campaign. I want to end the war in Iraq. I want to turn this economy around. I want health care for every American. I want every child to live up to his or her God-given potential. And I want the nearly 18 million Americans who voted for me to be respected, to be heard, and no longer to be invisible.
To be respected, to be heard, and no longer be invisible? Okay, that, you know, certainly is a setup for all kinds of snotty remarks on my part, but I learned a long time ago not to play snotty with somebody who is crazy. What the hell is she talking about? Who is invisible? I mean, for God's sake, for the past year, what invisible? What? I want the nearly 18 million Americans who voted for me to be respected. Who's not respecting them? To be heard. Who's not hearing them? And no longer be invisible. How are they invisible? Oh, never mind, never mind. All those beeps you hear, that indicates that we have edited the remarks. Those are edit beeps. McCain also gave a speech last night, basically attacking Obama and repeating the line over and over again with about as much enthusiasm as, I think I already used this, somebody who is suffering from a fairly severe case of constipation. The line is, that's not change we can believe in. That's not change we can believe in. He said it about 20 times, and what was the what was with that creepy, shiny makeup? I mentioned it last night, and looking at the video again today, it was like, oh, my God. I mean, really, it looked like, look, I've been to a lot of funerals, okay? Some of them open caskets, some closed, some the people wound up in urns, and, you know, just the whole thingy with funerals. But John McCain looked like a dressed-up corpse. He did. He looked, it had that kind of shiny, creepy, you know, I'm not dead look that so many morticians do, I guess, for the survivors. I'm not dead. They're just closing the top on this box and putting me in the ground because, oh, I don't know, it beat the hell out of going to Six Flags. What is it? What is it? Anyway, I digress. He looked like a mortician got hold of him last night. I can't wait for the televised debate with McCain and Obama side by side. But I digress again. Here's Johnny, the original grumpy old man.
You know, I have a few years on my opponent. So I'm surprised that a young man is bought into so many failed ideas.
Yeah, goddamn right. Yeah.
Like others before him, he seems to think government is the answer to every problem.
No!
The government should take our resources and make our decisions for us.
No!
That type of government doesn't trust Americans to know what's right or what's best in their own interests.
Where's the beer?
It's the attitude of politicians who are sure of themselves but have little faith in the wisdom, decency, and common sense of free people.
Beer!
That attitude created the unresponsive bureaucracies of big government in the first place. And that's not change we can believe in.
No! Hell no! Where's the beer? Oops! All right. Now, here's a little summary of the rest of the speech. I guess he's trying to sound quietly outraged in a breathy little boy wonder kind of way that is off-putting when you consider he was alive when the first talking movie was filmed. But anyway, where's the passion? Where's the energy? Fire in the belly. And where's the fixident? His teeth are whistling like a World War I sailor. Listen to this.
I oppose subsidies that favor big business over small farmers and tariffs on imported products that have greatly increased the cost of food.
Oh, not again.
Senator Obama supports these billions of dollars in corporate subsidies and the tariffs that have led to rising grocery bills for American families.
What is that?
That's not change we can believe in. Senator Obama voted for the same policies that created the problem.
Yeah.
In fact, he voted for the energy bill promoted by the President and Vice President Cheney, which gave even more breaks to the oil industry.
And?
That's not change we can believe in. We're not people who believe only in the survival of the fittest.
Uh-oh.
Work in America is more than a paycheck. It's a source of pride, self-reliance, and identity. But making empty promises to bring back lost jobs gives nothing to the unemployed worker except false hope. That's not change we can believe in. He's an intelligent man, but he feels he must defer to the special interests that support him. That's not change we can believe in. He doesn't trust us to make decisions for ourselves and wants the government to make them for us. And that's not change we can believe in.
Oh, kill me now! Where's the beer? Okay, that was McCain. This is Obama. I can't wait for these debates.
John McCain has spent a lot of time talking about trips to Iraq in the last few weeks. But maybe if he spent some time taking trips to the cities and towns that have been hardest hit by this economy, cities in Michigan and Ohio, and right here in Minnesota, he'd understand the kind of change that people are looking for. Maybe if he went to Iowa and met the student who works the night shift after a full day of class and still can't pay the medical bills for a sister who's ill, he'd understand she can't afford four more years of a health care plan that only takes care of the healthy and the wealthy. She needs us to pass health care right now, a plan that guarantees insurance to every American who wants it and brings down premiums for every family who needs it. That's the change we need, Minnesota. Maybe if John McCain went to Pennsylvania and he met the man who lost his job but can't even afford the gas to drive around and look for a new one, he'd understand we can't afford four more years of our addiction to oil from dictators. That man needs us to pass an energy policy that works with automakers to raise fuel standards and makes corporations pay for their pollution and oil companies invest their record profits in a clean energy future. An energy policy that will create millions of new jobs that pay well and can't be outsourced. That's the change we need, Minnesota. And maybe if John McCain spent some time in the schools of South Carolina, or St. Paul, Minnesota, or where he spoke tonight in New Orleans, Louisiana, he'd understand that we can't afford to leave the money behind for No Child Left Behind, that we owe it to our children to invest in early childhood education and recruit an army of new teachers and give them better pay and more support, and finally decide that in this global economy, the chance to get a college education should not be a privilege for the few, but a birthright of every American. That's the change we need in America. That's why I'm running for President of the United States.
Ah! Oops, excuse me.
My friend, that's not the change I can believe in.
All right, we have one more when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Snuggle up with your favorite screamer, more Mike Malloy.
It's about 9 before the hour. All right. Here's the last one from last night from Barack's closing remarks. Now, tough question. Does anyone remember Insane McCain's victory speech a while back? Anybody? Can I see some hands? No? No hands. All right. What does that tell you? So let me put the question this way. Of Senator Obama and Senator McCain, which one inspires you to vote for them in January, according to McCain, right? Oh, God. All right. That's not change we can believe in.
America, this is our moment. This is our time. Our time to turn the page on the policies of the past. Our time to bring new energy and new ideas to the challenges we face. Our time to offer a new direction for this country that we love. The journey will be difficult. The road will be long. I face this challenge with profound humility and knowledge of my own limitations. But I also face it with limitless faith in the capacity of the American people. Because if we are willing to work for it and fight for it and believe in it, then I am absolutely certain that generations from now, we will be able to look back and tell our children that this was the moment when we began to provide care for the sick and good jobs to the jobless. This was the moment when the rise of the oceans began to slow and our planet began to heal. This was the moment when we ended a war and secured our nation and restored our image as the last best hope on earth. This was the moment. This was the time when we came together to remake this great nation so that it may always reflect our very best selves and our highest ideals. Thank you, Minnesota. God bless you. God bless the United States of America.
Well, now, it's a toss-up. It's a toss-up between that one and the one from McCain. That's not change we can believe in. play a little bit more of that again. Yeah,
I oppose subsidies that favor big business over small farmers.
Oh.
And tariffs on imported products that have greatly increased the cost of food.
Boo.
Senator Obama supports these billions of dollars in corporate subsidies and
Boo.
The tariffs that have led to rising grocery bills for American families.
What is
That's
that?
That's not change we can believe in.
That's not change we can believe in. You know, my friends, he's an intelligent man, but that's not change we believe in. Look, we've seen this movie. We've seen it for the past 8 years. A freak, an absolute freak of nature, George W. Bush. And now this guy, that's not change we believe in. You know, he's a young man. Boo! What'd he ever do to... Boo! Oh, now hold on until I get the goddamn line out, and then you can boo. Well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to curse there. I know I'm in Kenner, Louisiana, my friends. Y'all don't cuss down here, do you? Oh, man. Can I get a volunteer out of the front row down there or come up and scratch my face? If you have any doubts about if it's going to be McCain and Obama, if you have any doubts about who will inspire us to get off our asses and do something, leadership is one thing, but it's got to be inspirational leadership, right? I mean, we're not a nation of sheep, almost. But there's still about 25, 30, 35% of us who are not a nation of sheep. We're not. The other 65 is ready to toss in the towel and just, kind of fall down and die or something. I don't know. But there's a good 35% of us in this country. I don't know. How many would that be? Would that be 100 million of us who are still willing to give it one more shot? One more chance, one more real push. And yeah, Barack Obama's young. Yeah, he's inexperienced. Yeah, he's got corporate backers. Yeah, he's got some crappy votes in the Senate. He knew this Resco character. Yeah, when he was 8 years old, William Ayers was planting bombs. And yeah, his minister, his former minister's out of his mind. Do you want to give him a chance or not? What do you want to do? It's up to you. It really is up to you. If you don't want to give this guy a chance and vote for McCain or stay home, then goddamn do it. If you don't want to give this guy a chance and you want to stick with this tired crap, okay, you know the path to take, bro. Welcome back. It's 6 and a half past the hour. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. All right, before we had that sound for you, we had the setup of Barack Obama and just about every other politician making the pilgrimage to the AIPAC general meeting today, or the past couple of days. And a lot of people have pointed out to me, Jewish people that I know, have pointed out to me that AIPAC is much smaller than its publicity or its PR would have Americans believe. Fair enough. It is, however, a very strong lobbying force, and for some reason, so many American politicians buy into the PR or the image that AIPAC has established and make this annual pilgrimage to address this organization. Now, there's nothing wrong with addressing organizations that you, as a politician, think can help you. It doesn't make any difference who they are unless, you know, they believe in, baby sacrifice or something. But the statements that are made are usually, in front of AIPAC, are usually much more warlike than what the politician making them, in my opinion, really believes. I think most politicians who are American, sure, they would love to honor whatever agreements we have. I don't know that we have treaties. I have no idea. Don't want to know. Whatever agreements we have with Israel, I'm sure most politicians, most Democratic politicians, would honor those agreements. But I also think that most Democratic politicians understand that their first loyalty has to be to the United States. I question whether or not, let me rephrase the question, I question the dedication to this country that any politician has if he or she would say, if blank country is attacked, we will come to your defense. If you are attacked with nuclear weapons, we will respond to the attacker with nuclear weapons. I question the mental stability of a politician who makes that kind of a statement and means it. Now, a politician who makes that kind of a statement or even similar statements to lobbying organizations such as, pick one, AIPAC, National Rifle Association, a teachers union, Teamsters union, politicians will make these kinds of blanket statements in front of these groups because they think, well, I'll say this, and then they'll go out and help me get reelected, or they'll contribute money to my campaign fund. Fair enough, given the sickness of the campaign system in this country. You understand that last statement, right? Okay. Barack Obama, along with everybody else who is anybody in Washington, made the pilgrimage to AIPAC and today and over the past couple of days and made their statements. Now, today in the Senate, there was a thing that happened between Joe Lieberman and Barack Obama. But here's the prelude to that thing. Sam Stein, writing at the Huffington Post, has this. He points out that Lieberman is serving as, obviously, as John McCain's foreign policy attack dog. He jumped on a conference call with reporters today to rip holes into Barack Obama's stance on Israel. Now, let me digress. What the hell did Barack Obama say at the AIPAC convention that pissed off Joe Lieberman? The AIPAC people were on their feet repeatedly with lusty cheers for what Barack Obama was saying, but it's not good enough for Holy Joe Lieberman. Back to Sam Stein, who writes, playing off of Obama's address to to AIPAC, the Connecticut Independent, that would be Lieberman, acknowledged that he hadn't heard the speech before taking Obama to task for not being consistently tough on Iran. Lieberman said, quote, I appreciate many of the very good intentions to Israel and Israeli security that Senator Obama expressed today. I thought in the speech there was a disconnect between things Senator Obama said today, particularly in regard to Iran, and things he has said or done earlier, either in the campaign or the Senate, end quote. Well, son of a bitch, Joe. What do you want? What do you want? Don't answer. I know what you want. You want a fine tooth, one of those combs that sometimes you have to use with your kid to get the little lice nits out of their head. You know, and they come home from preschool and say, with a note from the teacher, well, the children have lice in their hair. And you get those little combs. You ever seen that? No, we haven't done it here. Not with Molly. I did it with Chris about 30 years ago. But, you know, those little combs. That's what Lieberman wants, a little nit comb. Parse every single word. If Obama says nuclear war is not off the table, Lieberman's not going to like the off the table thing. That's too vague. Oh, God, have I told you about Hadassah? Anyway, the crux of Lieberman's argument, according to Sam Stein, was that Obama was putting the blame for Iran's rise in the Middle East on America's doorstep, pushing the argument that the war in Iraq had strengthened Ahmadinejad's standing in the region and left Israel less secure. Well, yes! God damn it, of course! Of course that's true! Who says it isn't? Find me somebody in the Israeli government who disagrees with that. Of course it's made Israel less secure. Of course it's given rise to Iranian hegemony wherever they can find. Of course it has. But you see, when Obama said something about guns and Bibles, the crazies in this country jumped all over his ass. Well, here's Lieberman doing the same thing on a different topic. Lieberman went on to say, if Israel is in danger today, it's not because of U.S. foreign policy, which has been strongly supportive of Israel in every way. It's not because of what we've done in Iraq. It's because Iran is a fanatical terrorist expansionist state and has a leader and leadership that constantly threatens to extinguish the state of Israel. Oh, God. Is there a bathroom around here? Oh, Lieberman, for Christ's sake. You know, this from a guy who must know the history of Iran, who must know what we did to them in 1953, which gave rise to the kind of mullah fundamentalism that now exists in that country. And surely Lieberman also must understand that the real power behind Ahmadinejad rests with the mullahs, who are not interested in war with Israel at all. They would like to be like Turkey and become trading partners with Israel. But no, it's much more convenient to focus on Ahmadinejad, who never said Israel must be eliminated, or whatever the hell the press in this country insisted he said. We went through that one night parsing the Farsi. No, not me. I don't speak Farsi. It had been done for me, word by word. Anyway, so Lieberman is climbing all over Barack Obama that he wasn't pro-Israel enough. What does it take to be pro-Israel enough for someone like Lieberman? What does it take? Oh, I don't know. It's got to be more than he did. I've got to go home tonight and talk with Hadassah about this. I don't know. But then here it comes. Oh, we have a break. Oh, you're going to have to wait. From Roll Call. That was Sam Stein writing in the Huffington Post, and Sam includes in his diary at Huffington Post today, he includes an update from Roll Call, the Hill, the Capitol Hill, what do you call it? Not newspaper. I guess newspaper. And we'll have that report for you when we come back. But just keep in mind, I'm giving you the setup now. You know, Barack Obama goes to AIPAC, does the AIPAC thing, pretty much declares war on Iran, if it means Israel thinks it's at risk. And that's the part that gets me. If Israel really fell at risk with Iran, or threatened by Iran, it would take maybe what? How long does it take for the Israeli Air Force to fly under the radar, attack Iran, be back home for dinner, and Iran is in just smoldering ruins? How long does that take? Huh? Okay, 3-4 hours.
I'm a driver. I'm a winner. Things are going to change. I can feel it.
Bon, de partir n'importe où, bras dessus, bras dessous, en chantant des chansons. C'est si bon de se dire des mots doux, de petits rires.
21 past the hour. All right, so roll call reports today the following. During a Senate vote today, Obama dragged Lieberman by the hand to a far corner of the Senate chamber and engaged in what appeared to reporters in the gallery as an intense three-minute conversation. While it was unclear what the two were discussing, the body language suggested that Obama was trying to convince Lieberman of something, and his stance appeared slightly intimidating. Using forceful but not angry hand gestures, Obama literally backed up Lieberman against the wall, leaned in very close at times, and appeared to be trying to dominate the conversation as the two talked over each other in a few instances. Still, Obama and Lieberman seemed to be trying to keep the back and forth congenial as they both patted each other on the back during and after the exchange. Afterwards, Obama smiled and pointed up at reporters peering over the edge of the press gallery for a better glimpse of their interaction. Obama loyalists were quick to express their frustration with Lieberman's decision and warned that if he continues to take a lead role in attacking Obama, it could complicate his professional relationship with the Democratic caucus. Ah, the intrigue. So for those of you who wrote and said, what was the dust-up between Lieberman and Obama? Because, you know, Lieberman was the grandfather figure for Obama when he came to the Senate. Who's this new colored boy? Oh, God, I have to call Hadassah. And to pay him back, Obama worked to get Lieberman through the Democratic primary a couple of years ago that Ned Lamont won. And then, of course, Lieberman all of a sudden discovered he's an independent. He's really a Republican. I just wish the hell he would go ahead and make the change. So I don't know. Maybe that's an indication. I don't know. You find your little drinks of water in the desert where you can, right? Maybe, just maybe, that's an indication that Obama is doing what a lot of politicians do, where it concerns AIPAC or the NRA or anybody else. You know, you make your little pilgrimage, and you say what you know the crowd wants to hear, and then you just ignore them. I mean, hasn't that happened to you? It's damn sure happened to me. Maybe that's what Barack Obama's doing. And then again, maybe not. But I'll tell you what, we'll eventually know, won't we? In the meantime, it might be easier for the people who really, really, really think AIPAC really, really, really is important to get back into that, well, the Jews own everything mindset, and, you know, where you're more comfortable.
Well, you know, they own the media. And all the banks. Let me tell you about the Rothschilds. You know about them?
There's just no compromise in this country, is there? Huh? There's just nowhere to go, nowhere to turn. I start talking about AIPAC, and I get all these pissed off Jews writing to me, telling me, you know, you're crazy. What are you talking about? I start criticizing Israeli foreign policy, and I get all the anti-Semites crawling out of the woodwork. Yeah, goddamn Jews. I mean, what way is there any common ground here? This is why I've been saying for 5 years, that's a subject I don't touch. What the hell good is this little program anyway? The slaughter of the Palestinians will continue. The anti-Semitism against the Jews will continue. But I get tired of it, you know? I get tired of both sides in it. I really do. But I've said that before. So, okay, Malloy, why do you go back to the topic? Oh, I don't know. A streak of masochism, maybe? Hit me, beat me, flail me, make me do bad talk radio. Bring up Israel and the Palestinians. Bring up AIPAC. I will say this, though. You know, Barack Obama, regarding McCain talking about, well, my friends, he hasn't been to Iraq. He doesn't know. I've been there. Let me tell you something. Barack Obama faces more danger every time he stands up before a crowd of 18,000 people in this country than John McCain has faced in all his little fake-ass toy trips to Baghdad. You know that, don't you? Don't you, American? Because we know about this, say, in this country. We know what we really think about the Jews and the Catholics and the blacks and the immigrants. Ah! We know. So trust me on that one. Barack Obama, every time he stands up in front of a crowd, puts himself at far greater risk than John McCain has put himself in all his trips to Iraq. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Talk, I would appreciate you knowing. Talk, I thought your love had come to stay.
Radical Talk Radio, make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
Do y'all know who Terry Malloy was? And his brother Charlie. Terry says, remember that night in the garden? You came down to my dressing room and you said, kid, this ain't your night. We're going to go for the price on Wilson. You remember that? This ain't your night. My night. I could have taken Wilson apart. So what happens? He gets a title shot outdoors in a ballpark. What do I get? A one-way ticket to Palookaville. He was my brother, Charlie. You should have looked out for me a little bit. You should have taken care of me just a little bit so I wouldn't have them dives for the short-end money.
Well, I had some bets down for you. You saw some money.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody. Instead of a bum, which is what I am. Let's face it. Somehow that reminds me of Hillary.
Prairie 2 writes, as far as Israel and Iran is concerned, Iran is beyond the range of Israel's F-15s. Unless they got U.S. Air Force refueling or they didn't care about making it home again. So if they do attack Iran, remember the U.S. is directly involved. All right, thanks. What do I know from the range of F-15s, right? Nothing. Now, one last thing here. This is in the Independent of the U.K. newspaper tomorrow, Thursday. By Patrick Coburn, a secret deal being negotiated in Baghdad would perpetuate the American military occupation of Iraq indefinitely, regardless of the outcome of the U.S. presidential election in November.
The terms of the impending deal, details of which have been leaked to The Independent, are likely to have an explosive political effect in Iraq. Iraqi officials fear that the accord, under which U.S. troops would occupy permanent bases, conduct military operations, arrest Iraqis, and enjoy immunity from Iraqi law, will destabilize Iraq's position in the Middle East and lay the basis for unending conflict in their country. But the accord also threatens to provoke a political crisis in the U.S. President Bush wants to push it through by the end of next month so he can declare a military victory and claim his 2003 invasion has been vindicated. But by perpetuating the U.S. presence in Iraq, the long-term settlement would undercut pledges by the Democratic presidential nominee Barack Obama to withdraw U.S. troops if he is elected president in November. The timing of the agreement would also boost the Republican candidate John McCain, who has claimed the United States is on the verge of victory in Iraq, a victory that he says Mr. Obama would throw away by a premature military withdrawal. Under the terms of the new treaty, the Americans would retain the long-term use of more than 50 bases in Iraq. American negotiators are also demanding immunity from Iraqi law for U.S. troops and contractors, and a free hand to carry out arrests and conduct military activities in Iraq without consulting the Baghdad government. The precise nature of the American demands has been kept secret until now. The leaks are certain to generate an angry backlash in Iraq. One Iraqi politician said, quote, "It is a terrible breach of our sovereignty," unquote, adding that if the security deal was signed, it would delegitimize the government in Baghdad, which would be seen as an American pawn. The U.S. has repeatedly denied it wants permanent bases in Iraq, but one Iraqi source said, quote, "That is just a tactical subterfuge," end quote. The Bush administration also wants control of Iraqi airspace below 29,000 feet and the right to pursue its war on terror in Iraq, giving it the authority to arrest anybody it wants and to launch military campaigns without consultation. Iraq's Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is believed to be personally opposed to the terms of the new pact, but feels his coalition government cannot stay in power without U.S. backing. The Iraqi government wants to delay the actual signing of the agreement, but the office of Vice President Dick Cheney has been trying to force it through. The U.S. ambassador in Baghdad, Ryan Crocker, has spent weeks trying to secure the accord. Gosh, I haven't heard anything about that. Have you? Well, there you have it. Looks like they're going to declare victory. We won! How many Americans are going to buy into this if this comes to fruition? How many Americans are going to buy into it? This is incredible stuff, isn't it? U.S. troops occupy 50 permanent bases, be able to conduct military operations anywhere, any place they want to within that sad country, arrest Iraqis, enjoy immunity from Iraqi law, destabilize Iraq's position in the Middle East. Nah, it wasn't about the oil. It really wasn't. It was about U.S. Empire spear tip right into the heart of a strategic part of the globe from which the U.S. can launch all sorts of attacks against just damn near anybody. It's going to be a rough ride, and you know it's going to be a rough ride, and I know it's going to be a rough ride, and it's almost, going back to what I said several months ago, let's elect this insane McCain. Let's give him the presidency. Let's do it. Give him the presidency. And make sure that the House and the Senate have veto-proof Democratic Party majorities that can be trusted. Oh, wait a minute. What am I saying? Oh, Christ, that's not going to work either. Well, if we could do that, you see, then when McCain tries anything, the U.S. Congress can... bad idea. All right. Then let's make sure that when we elect Barack Obama, that he has a clear understanding that we don't want any more war. We'd like, wait a minute, is that going to work?
What if there's a false flag operation against Israel and it's declared that it came from Iran? Oh, damn. All right. What's the next option? Let's get some backdoor deals going with Hillary Clinton and put her in. I guess there's not too many ways to turn here, is there? Huh? Okay. Well, just lay in a big supply of popcorn. Because you know and I know that MSNBC and Fox and CNN and ABC and CBS and NBC are probably already putting together the music they're going to use as they try to brand for their own particular network the next U.S. invasion of some country in the Middle East. I wonder who that'll be. Secret plan to keep Iraq under U.S. control. Secret plan. Are you nervous about any of this? You ever get scared? Do you ever take a look at some of the stuff that you can glean from various websites around the globe or newspaper accounts, or occasionally it slips through on a television news report, and you listen to the sentence, you go, wait, what? And it's gone. They're on to the next story. So you go to the website, and you check it out, and you, oh, my God. Do you ever get just real nervous about everything? Yeah, me too. I guess if one doesn't get nervous or scared or freaked out, it's because that person's on heavy-duty drugs or being prepped for surgery or something. I don't know. Oh, man. So what's going to happen? Barack Obama gives good speech, doesn't he? He really does. Really gives good speech. Hillary Clinton is a whiny ass of all whiny asses. John McCain, I don't know. You ever watch John McCain and think he must be an animatron? He's not really, you know, those little herky-jerky movements. Just like, is that really his nerve endings transmitting stuff to his brain? And Barack Obama, you know, bounces up on the stage and has that look on his face like, ah, damn, look at this. But you know in your heart, don't you? You know, come on, get real. You know that Barack Obama is, as a matter of fact, a million miles wide and probably about an inch deep. Huh? So what do you want to do here? Anybody got any ideas? What do you want to do? We're about ready to take a break, and then when we come back, we'll try to squeeze in at least one phone call before this program ends. Huh? Stick around. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M. It's about 10 before the hour, thanks to the crew
who delivered this program tonight. Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, and our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Let's talk with Phil in Scranton, PA, who's listening on the Internet. Phil, you've been holding on, I think, longer than anyone in my radio career. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank God there's 3 minutes after 9 o'clock in the East.
Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, all I wanted to say is, you know, all these people that keep saying that Clinton should be the vice president slot,
yeah.
You know, all these people that have said this have attacked Barack Obama like he's Joe Schmo from the street.
Mm-hmm.
And especially that one guy, Bob Johnson, the BET founder, had made such a big ruckus in the South Carolina primary, you know, said Barack had drug used and all this kind of mess.
Right.
And
right.
Now he's pitching for her to be vice president and says that he thinks the Black Caucus should get behind that. I don't understand it, and it's just so sickening.
Yeah, this has been the Democratic Party's worst nightmare, because the Democratic Party has long presented itself, and correctly, I think, as the big tent party. You know, if you're a feminist, welcome aboard. If you're a person of color, come on in. If you're gay, howdy. If you're lesbian, glad to have you, sister. If you're a union, you see, if you're Jewish, if you're this, if you're that, come on in. But all of a sudden.
Well, we know now.
Yeah, you know, when the rubber hit the road and all of a sudden your two primary contenders. Remember, there were 8 of these people, I believe, when this thing first started. And all of a sudden, after all these months, it comes down to, oh, my God, the black guy and the white woman. Uh-oh. Trouble here in River City. The Democratic Party did not know what to do. All of a sudden, they're confronted with their own philosophy, and they absolutely fell apart at the seams. With all their stupid ass rules, trying to change this and break that and move that over here, and let's shift this around. And all of a sudden, they have a woman, a white woman, and a black man, and it's like, oh my God.
Right. And I was watching BBC America's newscast, and a gentleman from the Washington Post was on there. I don't know his name, but he said that even if Obama doesn't win, it's a stepping stone, because I guess the reporter was asking, well, what if he loses? And, the gentleman, the editor, is black himself, and he said that, he thinks it's a stepping stone for, other little kids, black kids,
mm-hmm.
that come up thinking they can dream and they can do something. So,
yeah,
it's a positive.
Yeah, well, there is that aspect of it, and there's no denying that that's a good aspect of Barack Obama's candidacy and now securing the nomination. I saw something on one of the news programs or something today. I don't know where I saw it, but 3 or 4. Young kids who look to be in elementary or middle school, African-American kids, and they were just talking off the cuff, like kids will, about how they felt inspired, how they felt like, oh, my God, a black man is got the Democratic nomination. This one kid said, I love Martin Luther Dr. King, and I love the dream and all that, but the problem with the dream is eventually you wake up and you're faced with the same harsh reality. And now, this kid said, I wake up and I see that, oh, my God, Barack Obama is the Democratic nominee to be president of the United States. So all of a sudden, this has been a transcendental moment. I don't know that presidential politics is a good place for transcendental moments, but this has certainly been one for people of color in this country. This is the first time they're going to have somebody legitimately to vote for that looks like them. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? It doesn't matter what it is. It is what it is. It is a visceral, emotional feeling. How long ago was it when my good friend Congressman John Lewis was having his head cracked open on the Richard Pettus Bridge over here in Alabama? How long ago was that? It wasn't that long ago. 43 years? Is that all it's been? And now, here you go. Barack Obama. Unless... unless the right wing, the Republican Party in this country, really goes after the race thing, which they will, he's going to be the next president.
Well, I think we have a tremendous party, and the even the folks that are bitter right now, Barack will bring them in, and he's going to bring this country together. And I really feel that because the many convention or many talks that he has given that I've seen in person and on the television, mm-hmm. he draws in all kinds of people, and it's just like. It's amazing. It's like, why? I mean, I wouldn't say liken it to going to church, but like a church that brings in everybody.
He makes a heart to heart or soul to soul connection. And it's, right. It's been a long time since any politician, Democrat or Republican, has done that. Reagan made a connection to certain people, but Barack Obama, I think, just even the ones who are so. Attached almost like an umbilical cord to Hillary Clinton, even they, I'm sure, are moved by what he says and how he says it. He's got that Q factor, I guess they refer to it in television, that makes people want to look at him, want to be around him, want to hear what he's got to say. And he's got that. And whether he becomes president or not, he inspires people to pay attention. If nothing else, he makes people pay attention. How long has it been since you or I have paid attention to a politician? How long has it been? I mean, really paid attention to what they've said. So, Phil, thanks, man. I got to leave it there. We're out of time. I'll see you tomorrow night. All right, take care. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.